Hello, and welcome, and thank you for being here. My name is Arlette Roman, and I'm a PhD student at the University of Mannheim. I'm doing business ethics with a focus in technology, and today I will talk about motivational appeals to overcome biases in technology design. Since there's so few of us, feel free to raise your hand and ask any questions if it gets too blurry, if it gets too complicated in the end. And yeah, I hope to get your feedback and comments and answer your questions as you have them. So today I will give a brief introduction on types of bias. I will start very broad. I will speak a little bit about algorithmic fairness, but that's not going to be the main topic of today. I'm actually just going to focus on the representational harms in artificial intelligence and then introduce you to my research design, my experimental design, our findings, and listen in the implications that we found. So let's get to it. Computer ethicists have identified three main types of biases. The first one, technical bias, which we hear often, which are the limitations and constraints of the technology itself, also could be biased data. And an example of this is Amazon's recognition system performing the worst for darker females. The second type, and a very important one, is the pre-existing social bias, which, as its name says, it's a bias that exists before deploying our model. And this is very important because if we don't understand the social context and the potential society's bias that the model will augment or amplify, our whole model will not be successful. And an example of this is a medical algorithm which wanted to identify patients with the most complex healthcare need. The programmers, of course, with all the well intention, thought that if they could, that they could predict complex healthcare needs from how much money a patient spends on their healthcare. And this causal theory, which evolves from our own lived experiences, unfortunately ignored the pre-existing social bias that in the United States there's a racial gap of access to healthcare, there's a wealth gap as well, and there's other factors of structural inequalities in the healthcare system that will, of course, bias our results and create emergent bias, which is new biases created from our model. So the thing is that algorithmic fairness was not very popular until recently. Most research in the machine learning field focuses on optimizing accuracy. And as we know, computer science is a field skewed in its demography, and the thing is that moral judgment often is related to demography traits as well as our beliefs in fairness and discrimination. Pearson in 2018 showed evidence that females felt more strongly than males to exclude the categorization of gender if that would make it less likely that women would be recommended STEM classes, even if it increases algorithms' accuracy. So, of course, accuracy and fairness, there's a trade-off there, and how we prioritize will depend on several factors, including, of course, personality, which we will see later. So why is this important for business? Well, of course, aside from the evident societal harm that automated decision making has the potential to do, business wants to avoid scandals. We want to keep the trust of our customers in our company. We want to be reliable and accountable to our stakeholders and comply with human rights laws and non-discrimination laws, and of course avoid discrimination lawsuits based on prima facie discrimination due to AI. However, I'm going to focus on an under-researched harm, which is the representational harms, as I had already gave some examples of the allocative harms, which leads to economic harm, as it, for example, continuously denying loans to women, right? But the representational harms focuses more on the narrative that we reinforce about a group of people. Artificial intelligence is the biggest experiment in our history, classification experiment in our history. We are defining what it means to be black, white, what it means to be a woman, a man. And I focus here on the lack of representation of different ethnicities in the digital world, in the virtual world, which can lead to societal harms. Experts at the University of Cambridge have problematized this as the whiteness in AI. And while this refers to the portrayal of artificial intelligence as white in films, stock images in AI chatbots, virtual assistants, and they theorize that this could be as a neurocentric portrayal of intelligence or the idealized others, and we can see this also in female sex robots. So this raises the question of how will the future of race and gender develop in the subsequent autonomous stage of general AI? And because of this question, that of course right now doesn't look very optimistic, we thought, well, we need to engage programmers into social justice. We need to find ways to motivate programmers to look at their work, to have also agency about their technology design. And so we also wanted to understand if the communicators' race and gender had an impact into this strategy. We know from different literatures, especially the literature on confronting discrimination and bias, that message transportation depends on three things. The first thing is the characteristics of the audience, the characteristics of the speakers, and also the message framing. So in our experiment, we decided to manipulate the gender and race of the speaker, as well as the message framing, in the negative or problem framing versus a solution or a positive framing, which we'll see ahead. But it's also important to know that stereotypes also influence the message reception. And stereotypes are pervasive. Research shows that low and high prejudiced people are aware of stereotypes. The difference is whether we choose to apply them in our judgment or not. But humans use social categories, and that is not going away, and especially with artificial intelligence. Feminists categorized by gender, and high prejudiced people categorized by race, and others categorized by physical attractiveness and such. So it's only natural, and stereotypes are also inevitable when we meet someone from an out-group member, unless we have a goal to be egalitarian. And this goal to be egalitarian, or colorblind, we can say, is automatically activated when we see, when these persons meet someone from the out-group member. So this stereotype activation is what we measure in our experiment, as I will show you in a bit. And we do this through an implicit measure. So we want to measure real behavior and just realize how this changes across personality types. So after reviewing several literatures, we noticed that there was little talk about programmers' role in overcoming biases. Also, little empirical evidence regarding interventions and bias reduction in technology design, as well as black women's experiences while confronting discrimination, since most literature and most research evidence uses black people versus white people in their experiments, and intersectional theory theorizes that as black women face gender discrimination as well as racial discrimination, they have a unique experience that is not validated empirically, and that's what we try to do as well. And last but not least, as we learned from the stereotype confrontation literature, minorities receive a backlash when they talk about discrimination. I will explain further why. And we attempted to reduce this backlash with the solution framing. We will see what happens. So what we did is an online experiment with 590 programmers in Prolific. It was a 2x2 between subject design, white middle-aged programmers from the United States. As I said, we manipulated the race and the gender of the speaker, as well as the problem framing. Both speakers actually read the same paragraph, and just to summarize what the paragraph says, it explains bias in AI and how vulnerable populations as LGBTQ, people with disabilities, and women and people of color are the ones who tend to be most affected and not in the decision table. And so they both did videos where in one side there was "you are part of the problem" and in the other side there was the "you are part of the solution" and that they should seek remedies to proactively address this issue. So after looking into the... But after looking into this, after watching this video, they were presented with a mock website. And this is where we tried to measure the implicit bias and the real behavior. And this mock website showed a white AI chatbot. Of course, there's nothing inherently wrong with having a white AI chatbot, but you would think that after seeing a video explaining bias in AI and diversity, that you would at least mention it, right? So after we show this website, we ask, what would you change about this website in an open text box? And we coded 0 or 1 for those who mentioned anything about diversity. And this is our conceptual model. I will try to make it as digestible as possible. Our first hypothesis, we expected the problem framing to be superior to the solution framing when it comes to the detection of potential bias. As I explained, the detection of potential bias was whether the programmer mentioned diversity or not, right? This is our dependent variable. And this, we expected this to happen because the biggest predictors of pro-social behavior is guilt, fear, and shame. So our second, this was also confirmed in our results. Our second hypothesis was that the white male speaker using the problem framing was going to be the most effective in increasing the detection of potential bias, and that it would be reversed for the black women. And I'm going to go slow into explaining why we expected this. So when two members of the same race are having a conversation, the message is increased farther more than if they were of different races, generally. So when race matches race, message reception increases. Also, there's a stereotype violation because it's not expected from the white men to talk about discrimination. It seems it's a surprise effect. It seems non-self-interest. And it also, it seems non-self-interest, and it also reduces the threat. It reduces self-image threat as well as group threat. Meanwhile, when the black speaker uses a problem framing, she activates the angry black women stereotype. And instead of triggering guilt, which we need to predict a prosocial behavior, she triggers irritability most of the time. And the fact is that the literature says that targets of discrimination cannot trigger as much guilt as those who are not targets of discrimination. And we know that guilt is needed then. So we continue and we further, and lastly, expect that this will depend on the individual's personality type. And here we use the social dominance orientation scale, which is related to beliefs of a just world, is also related to legitimizing inequality, and let's call it levels of prejudice. And we know that levels of prejudice also influences the message reception from members of stigmatized groups. So we expected that individuals with low levels of prejudice will have a reversed effect, a total reverse effect, from individuals with high levels of prejudice. And the reason why we expect this is because this high prejudiced individuals who are high in social dominance orientation, they have a goal to be egalitarian, they have a goal to be colorblind. And in experiments, it has been shown that they are so used to correcting the stereotype activation over time, so often that they can do this in less than 500 milliseconds from seeing at an environmental cue, for example, a black person. So this is what we capture in our experiment, this implicit measure. So most of our hypotheses were confirmed, except for the black women and the message framing. I will explain more now. But as you can see, there's a reverse effect for low individuals and high for low prejudiced individuals and high prejudiced individuals. But let's go farther into it. So, as expected, the white male speaker using the problem framing was the most effective in detecting this potential bias. However, as we see here, it was not successful for the black women. And doesn't matter if she uses the problem framing, doesn't matter if she uses the solution framing, she still gets this backlash for talking about discrimination. So this can tell us something about tone policy in black women. It really doesn't matter so much if she says it in a positive way, if it's in a negative way. It's just that, well, the literature also says that, as is a stereotype confirmation, it's expected for minorities to talk about discrimination. So the message scrutiny is reduced. And as it is not expected for a white man to talk about discrimination, the message scrutiny then increases and it has a better effect. So we could not overcome this. However, in the high prejudice individuals, you will see this, that the black female speaker actually, using the problem framing, actually increases the most bias detection, but actually has no difference as well if she uses the positive or the solution framing. There's no difference here. And this counterintuitive result is because of the mechanism that we explained of stereotype inhibition, which that's why it causes to be reversed. And we are doing replications of this experiment to understand the mechanisms of exactly why this happened, but what we assume is that this could be done driven by anger or irritability. And that's why they mentioned diversity the most, because of this, because she triggered more anger and irritability. So basically, the takeaways are that we need allies. We cannot leave all the diversity work to people of color. And I think that this is a good argument against tone policing black women. Doesn't matter if they say it in a positive way, doesn't matter if they say it in a negative way, just by talking about discrimination, they have to pay a price. And last but not least, when talking about bias and discrimination, it would be useful to have a diverse pool of speakers in order to reach different personalities and different peoples in the speakers. Yeah, thank you. So if there's any questions.
Are you aware of any initiative?
Sorry, can you speak in the microphone?
Not for the presentation. My question is, are you aware of any initiative, business-oriented or not, that are employing such techniques to diminish bias with AI? Thanks.
Yeah. Actually, I'm not aware. I'm aware, there are some guidance into how to talk to an out-group member audience about discrimination, but I have not seen the manipulation of the messenger. All right. Okay. Good. Then, okay.
Thanks for the presentation. Small question about...
Sorry, I cannot understand very well.
Now is it better? Okay. So when it comes to machine learning, let's say the data sets, which don't have enough representation of all different races and types, mm-hmm. Would you say it's better to have separate data sets for each type of different racial group or whatever, or do we put more, or do we include more in the same data set while training, something like that?
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you use any website to figure out the distribution in your data?
I don't have any data. I'm just a theoretical question.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I mean, it depends, but not norm. I don't focus so much on that area of distributive justice. But yeah, the recommended thing is that they're all represented and that you can have like an idea of how your data is distributed between races and at least make sure that it's going to be fairly accurate between all race groups in your database.
Similar to the normal machine learning where there's different types in each data set, you have equal, every class has to be equally
Yeah, there's like a whole debate on that topic. Like, you know, if you want to engage into that, there's like different ways to right? There's different definitions of fairness. There, you know, no one agrees on what fairness is or should be. So it's very contextual. But yeah, I would say that it's very contextual and depends.
Thanks.
Okay. Then thank you so much.